I'm 82. What I say is that I'm better now than when I was 40. I feel more alive, more present. Maybe my body doesn't move as quickly, but it moves.
Welcome to Reinvention Rebels. Stories of brave and unapologetic women, 50 to 90 years young, who have boldly reimagined life on their own terms to find new purpose and possibilities. I'm your host, Wendy Battles. Ready for a dose of inspiration? Let's get to it. Vibrant, engaged, resilient, generous, joyful, passionate about life. These are just a few of the words that come to mind to describe my guest today, Millie Greneau. At 82 years young, Millie has a thirst for life that's downright contagious. This reinvention rebel lives life to the fullest, has as much energy now as when I met her 15 years ago, and continues her mission to make the world a more peaceful and happy place. Millie knows what it means to reinvent oneself, having transformed many times over. She's an ex-nun turned nightclub singer. Wait, what? We'll have to talk more about that. She's an ex-shy Kentuckian turned international speaker, and a near-death bike accident transformed her life yet again. While healing, she recognized her busy, nonstop lifestyle needed to change, so she developed strategies to help herself live with less anxiety and more joy. But that wasn't enough. She wanted to share what she learned with others, so she wrote Oasis in the Overwhelm, 60-second strategies for balance in a busy world. This and her other books have helped thousands of people around the world to live with more calm, clarity, and happiness. That, by the way, is how I met this incredible woman when I became an Oasis trainer. Among her many roles, she's a coach, mentor, author, and motivational speaker. She's a professional singer and guitarist and proud grandma to six. She loves different cultures and has lived abroad in Europe and Latin America. Above all, she has a passion for helping people see new possibilities for their lives, no matter their age or circumstances. I have the warmest place in my heart for this amazing woman, and I'm excited for you to listen to our conversation. Millie Greneau, welcome to Reinvention Rebels.
Thank you, Wendy. I'm so delighted to be here with you. Yes.
I am excited too. And Millie, you always inspire me. You are a role model for me. I'm really inspired by the fact that you've reinvented yourself many different times throughout your life, not just a one-time thing, not maybe as you've gotten older, but in different parts of your life. And I'd like to start our conversation with probably the question everybody who's listening to this wants to know. How does someone go from being a nun to a nightclub singer? That is not your average transformation or reinvention. That is like about the two furthest right spots you could be. How? Tell us just a little bit about how that happened.
Well, I can't tell you that it happened overnight, Wendy. You know how some things need a while to cook and percolate and then emerge. You know, thinking about it, when I was a kid, I think I was a bit of a show-off because my big sister hated me because she thought I was a show-off and kind of tried to dampen me down. And I was the fifth of seven kids, so we would always do things. But one of my favorite things, we didn't have this fancy bathroom. There was this, what was like aluminum shower in our basement where we would take a shower. And I would get in there when I was like 7 or 8 and sing my heart out, hoping that a Hollywood agent would be walking by and discover me. It never happened. It never happened. So life went on. I went through school, even through college, and then I went to be a nun, and I never starred in anything in those times. I mean, I was a great student. I was an editor of the paper, et cetera. But like being on stage in front of people, if anything, I was in the chorus, you know, just kind of background. And then when I became a nun, it was kind of shift more, even more to the background, because I wasn't there to show off. I was there to serve. But ironically, the group that I joined, the Mary Knowles Sisters, their whole mission is to go to other cultures and learn from them and with them. It's not to go and convert them. It's to be with them and see how we could work together. And I had the great good fortune to live and work in Bolivia and Peru for 3 years with indigenous people. And they brought out the music that had been buried in me. I can remember going there and some of the wonderful Bolivian songs. It was like, you know, the rhythms and everything. And it was right when the Beatles were beginning to come to Latin America. And I can hear the teenagers talking about Los Beatles, Los Beatles. That was the Beatles in Spanish.
Right.
So I began learning songs from them. By then, I had learned to practice on the guitar. I learned from one of my nun classmates. She was from El Paso, Texas, in Latina, so she taught me. So we began swapping songs then. I would teach them like Swing Low, Sweet Chariot, and the Limeña que tienes alma de tradición. And so this music just began coming out more naturally. So that was the South American part. Then I left the convent. I knew that whatever I had thought my calling was to be a nun forever, it wasn't. It's like many of us, when we hit that place where we've chosen to do something with our whole heart, soul, body, and then we hit a point where it's like, oh, I don't think this is even what God wants me to do. So I just knew I had to stop and had no idea what I was going to do after that. I just had to leave and start fresh and find out. So this is turning to be the long story of nun to nightclub singer, but they all fit. When I left, the only thing that I knew that I wanted to do was to somehow keep music alive in me. I remember the nun that I went to when I said, I have to leave. I just have to leave. She said, well, what will you do? I said, I have no idea. And she asked, thankfully, she asked this question, what has ever made you happy? I had to think for 2 weeks before I could really think of anything that had ever made me happy. I was so submerged in like, oh, I had chosen the wrong path. I wasted 8 years of my life. And finally, what came up, I needed to do music and music with people. And by some strange blessing at the mother house where I was staying, somebody had left a bass fiddle in the cafeteria. And I found it and began playing with that. So I knew two things. I needed to keep Spanish alive, so I wanted to be around Spanish-speaking people, and I had to let music come from me. And that's what landed me in New Haven, where I had never been in my life. A friend of mine, when he knew that I was thinking about leaving the convent, said, what are you going to do? And I said, I don't know. Why don't you come and spend some time in Milford? and just take a weekend away. So we talked when I was there, and I told him my two things, and he said, well, Mill, New Haven has 15% of the population is Spanish-speaking, so why don't you try for a job here? So here I landed in New Haven with no clothes, $200 for starting. My friend's mother gave me some of her old clothes, and I would go to Hadassah thrift shop with my dollar bill and buy clothes that I could wear. So that was a couple of years in New Haven, and I was teaching English as a second language. And then I went to Spain. I still wasn't doing anything really out with my voice. I was just kind of finding me for the first time. Like, even, did I like red or did I like blue? What did I like, you know, starting fresh? So then I lived in Barcelona for 3 years and studied guitar and began singing with the group there. Two people from England, one from Missouri, and me, we sang all kinds of songs like Breaking Up Is Hard to Do, and I began singing with that group, and we actually sang four groups in Barcelona, part of teaching English and partly for fun. So that kind of broke me in a little bit, and I can remember sitting in Barcelona with guitarists who were playing these wonderful Latin songs. And I had learned some of them, so I could even do two in Portuguese. I'd go, Olha que coisa mais linda, mais cheia de graça, you know, and just beginning to do it. So I came back to New Haven. Not a great time. I knew that I had to be doing something. And I can remember one New Year's holiday. I was really depressed, thinking, okay, I've made a lot of changes, but something's not right. No big boyfriends, didn't know exactly where I was going to live, what was my career path, etc. So I took out my guitar and said, okay, just practice every song you have ever learned. So for 3 days, that's what I did, just practicing and singing all these songs. And after that, I thought, geez, I think I'll go audition for a gig. And I went to a Mexican restaurant where I thought maybe they'd like, you know, music along with the meals. So I auditioned and I got my first really paid gig at Sloppy Jose restaurant in Milford, Connecticut. And then within the year, I was making my living by singing in every Mexican restaurant in a 20-mile radius of New Haven.
That's amazing.
From that, I was singing at New Haven Motor Inn. You know, like, you light up my life, whatever. So it just kind of step by step kept going. So does that answer the question, non-tonight club singer?
It does. And it's really inspiring that you made this very dramatic change, because in what you said, I heard several different things. And one of the themes I heard is that it was an evolution, that this didn't happen overnight. You kind of tipped your toe in and got more comfortable, learned along the way, sang in a group first before you. So it wasn't like you went just from the convent right to a nightclub, but you went through this process. But part of what I heard you say is that you were finding yourself, that you were like really figuring out who is Millie, which it seems like we're always trying to figure out no matter what age we are, right? It seems like it's something that continues to evolve. But I like how you couch this about you're in a convent, you were being of service to others, you weren't focused on yourself, but this process helped you uncover.
Yes, yes. They really helped me find me. And the surprising part was they loved that part of me that came out. So, you know, there was no competition. It was like we were having joy together. So I knew there was something real about this, just very precious that I needed to nourish and honor. Yeah.
Are you thinking, I'll have some of what she's having? Reinvention Ripples are amazing, as you can hear from our discussion. They've put themselves first, decided their dreams matter, and are taking action. They have unleashed their inner rebel and are living on purpose in midlife. Are you ready to start putting yourself first and embark on your midlife dreams, focused on what you want, not others' ideas of what you should do? Come check out my new audio course, Midlife Reinvention from the Inside Out, 8 Essentials to Greenlight Your Life. I share my roadmap to get you started on your reinvention journey with the key components you need to navigate detours and get on the road to smooth reinvention sailing. Sis, it is time to give yourself the green light to shine in midlife and crush those dreams of yours with joy and purpose. Join today and let's reinvent and get inspired together. Details are in the show notes.
I also like the fact that this is something that went back to when you were a kid. Like that right, the nun helped you identify what was it I love to do, and you were easily able to kind of figure out, well, it's singing, something that you loved growing up, that you did with total abandon and joy. And I like how you really got focused on, that's what I want to do. I want to have more joy in my life. I want to focus on the things that make me feel so good.
Right.
Because I think sometimes we're too practical in life. Like we're so, you know, I feel like sometimes I use my head too much, not my heart. But yeah. It's my heart that really leads me in the right direction.
And I think, Wendy, for me anyway, a lot of what kind of kept me undercover was being afraid of, oh, well, what will somebody think of me? Or what will they think if I do this? Or will they think I'm, you know, just out of bounds or too much? I can think one time I sang at the local YMCA with the piano player, and it was a baby grand piano. And I lay on top of the piano with this bouquet of flowers singing, come to me, my melancholy baby. And I was thinking, oh my God, if my big sister years ago would have heard that, she'd say, what are you doing?
But isn't it great when you get to the point where you can care less about what other people think and more about what you need, what you want? Because I know as women, we spend a lot of time supporting other people with their needs, whether it's our kids or our siblings or our partner, whoever it might be. Yeah. But I feel like we don't spend necessarily as much time on ourselves.
Yeah, that's one of the hard lessons I had to learn. I sometimes say it was challenging. Well, it's challenging for everybody, but especially for women. And I think it was difficult for me because I was raised Catholic and Southern, and like to do anything that felt like putting me first. Oh, no, you shouldn't do that. And then I finally realized, and this was especially when I was working with a lot of women who were very religious in the last couple of years, who had that notion of, if I take care of me, I'm being selfish. And it really hit me. Let's see, God made me. God made you, Wendy, and nobody else can be Wendy except you. And nobody can be Millie except me. So that's my primary responsibility, to be the best Millie I can be. And that's serving God and serving everybody. And you know what? One of the funny benefits is that my older sister, who was such a bugaboo for me, we are now very appreciative of each other. We had long, difficult talks about the upbringing and what was difficult for her, me, etc. But boy, are we cheerleaders for each other now. It's like, okay, go.
That's everything.
Girl.
That's everything. Having someone in your corner who is your biggest fan, I feel like as women, that's so important, really, to encourage and support each other. And even more powerful when it's someone in your family, right? Yeah. When you've gone through all this. And just like you're talking about, you evolved. That's an example of how your relationship certainly has evolved.
Exactly. Exactly. And Wendy, when you gave your introduction of me, I was like, oh, this is Wendy appreciating me. Drink it in, Mill. Drink it in.
Exactly. Exactly. Because I know that I've had this conversation with many women before, how it's hard for us to accept compliments. Someone says, whatever that thing is that is a great compliment, and we minimize it. Oh, not really. Oh, I don't think so. Instead of just, to your point, and I love this image of drinking it in. Yeah. Let's savor that. Let's appreciate ourselves, right? We don't necessarily need someone else to appreciate. I mean, it's great when someone else appreciates us, but I think it's even more powerful, though, when we can really appreciate ourselves.
I love that word, savor. Savor, just let it come in. And you know how often in the training I would ask, so where do you feel that? Where do you, like right now, I'm savoring your words. And where do I feel them? I feel it. It's in my heart. I feel it throughout my whole torso. It's letting my brain know, oh, yeah, this is real. This is true. Let it grow. Don't squash it.
Exactly. Exactly. We got to listen and soak it up.
Yes.
I love that.
Yes. Yeah.
I talk a lot about the power of reflection to help guide us as reinvention rebels. Reflection has been a key to so many areas of my life, around my own awakening and deeper connection to self. And that's also what I hear you saying as you talked a little bit about your evolution when you were younger. You experienced this personal awakening after this very severe bike accident.
Yeah.
In what way did reflection play a part in healing yourself and then creating oasis in the overwhelm, which you have now shared with so many people?
Well, Wendy, I tease and say, I think it's because I'm very hard-headed. You know, I can be very driven and kind of stubborn in a good way. I think it took an accident for me to wake up. I literally, the bike accident, I was thrown off my bike. I had 3 concussions and a ruptured kidney and was in the hospital for a couple of days. And the experiences there just taught me so much about life. I worked in the mental health division of that hospital, and it was my wake-up call, because I don't know how to put this briefly, the professionals took excellent medical care of me, or else I wouldn't be here today. But what I really think got me through was the humanity of the people who viewed me as a person, you know, like, after I had the accident, I was totally unconscious, and I was flown 42 miles in a Lifestar helicopter to the emergency room. And I came to consciousness only once, and I heard the whir of the helicopter and felt the hands of the EMT woman. And I knew she was good. Not intellectually, I just felt it. And then when I was in the ER, I was unconscious again, and the professionals did what they had to do, but it was like they didn't see me as a person. I remember the X-ray technician came in and stood me up, and I fainted. And the person who really held my hand and looked at me and said, Mildred, was the orderly. He had gotten down on the floor with me. And that next night, it was the housekeeper who came and touched my head where they hadn't even washed the blood off yet. And she said, "How you doing, honey?" So all of those things registered on me, so that when I was in the time when I couldn't work, I literally couldn't work for 3 months, and I was lying in my backyard hammock for healing, reflecting on all of this. It was just like, oh. And I say that's the time that I really looked at what I consider the two big questions of life, like, who am I and what am I here for? What am I here on this planet for? By then, I knew I was going to make it through. I knew I'd be alive. So it was during that time, that quiet time in the hammock, I didn't want to listen to any inspirational tapes or TV or movies or even visitors. I just needed to be in nature. I remember watching the ants crawl underneath the hammock. And I thought, well, they seem to know what they're doing, you know? And the rhododendron next to me was just beginning to open up. And during that time, I could just watch it opening. And I felt, in a way, that's what was happening to me. I didn't even want visitors. It was just like, I need this time. It must have been like a long retreat for me. And that's when this wisdom that had been stored in me kind of percolated, because I knew I had to be different when I went back to work, or else I'd get up in the rat race again, just be caught in it. So I found these four strategies that I tested out, and they only took 60 seconds each. And I thought, I have time to do that. I could do that. And it's not that I totally invented everyone. It's just that the wisdom of my teachers and of the world kind of came through me in a very practical way. So that reflection time was vital in me slowing down and coming up with something that helped me move forward. And that took its own time, too, to develop. When I went back to work, people noticed that I was different, and they wondered, okay, Mel, what's going on? What's going on? What are you doing? So I began telling some of them and sharing the strategies, and they wanted more. So I gave my first workshop to a group of hospice nurses and social workers, and they drank them up big time. It's like, oh, we could use these right now. So that gave me more encouragement to keep doing it. And in the meantime, I was learning all the new neuroscience about the neuroplasticity of the brain. And that was so exciting to me. I knew that my strategies were solid, and they weren't simply like, quote, new age affirmations. They can have power, but these were more than affirmations. These were actions that people did. And the neuroplasticity was like, oh, yes, yes, this is it. So people began saying, we don't want just your handouts. Why don't you write a book that has the neuroplasticity and the strategies and examples of how we can use them? So that's how the book began. And I think you know that the training began in another simple way. I gave a presentation of OASIS to a group of my colleagues at the International Coach Federation in Connecticut. And I was disappointed that day because I had hoped, oh, there's going to be 30 people here. I prepped. And there were only 10 people. And you know how that can be disappointing?
Yeah, right. When you have certain expectation and then it doesn't live up to what you're hoping.
Yes. And I thought, okay, Mel, you're here. these are the people who are here. Give it all you've got. I did. And five of those coaches said, Millie, we want to know more about this. You've got to start a training program so we can share it. And Wendy, you were in that first training program.
So funny how things work out. You just never know. I mean, the stars aligned and just like that, I met you. But isn't it so interesting, the path that you went on in this other reinvention and how you said, you know, you kind of figured out what you needed.
Yes.
And then you realized so many other people, because that's the same thing that's true today, right? So many people are seeking and are stressed out. I mean, obviously our world today is so complicated, our current situation, and everyone, I think, is trying to deal with it as best they can.
Right.
But I think the simplicity of it, like we all need something simple. Like I don't want something that's going to take me hours. I want to figure out how I can be calm, you know, in simple ways. And that's one of the things I really love about Oasis. It's just simple. Anybody can do it. And to your point, it doesn't take a lot of time.
And you don't need a lot of money. Like people say, oh, I can't go away on a retreat, or I got to take care of my kids. I can't join an ashram, or I can't, you know.
Yes.
And these are so practical, so doable. You don't need money. You can do them with your kids. You could do it with your partner. It's, well, you know, because you do them, Wendy, right?
What a fantastic way to take something that was so difficult, that could have been potentially tragic, that was such a hard situation, and really turn it around. Because I think that, right, so many of us need to figure out how can we be resilient in this way. And as women, as we age especially, I think it's a great, you know, metaphor for this idea of we need to figure out how we can nurture ourselves and become resilient no matter what we face.
Right. And Wendy, you know, I think that's something each of us keeps learning in new ways. Like even when I was the nun and I knew I had to leave, I was in the pits of despair. I was just way in a black hole. And I used to think I was unique. Oh, nobody has ever felt this way. Wake up, Mill. A lot of people feel this way, a lot. Even if it's, say, they entered a marriage they thought would last forever, or moved to a place they thought would make them entirely happy, or chose a career, and you hit something where it's something's not right. So I think honoring both your mind and your heart when something doesn't feel right, what is it saying? What is it saying to you? And I think, again, that reflection time is really important, because if we try to dodge it or escape it, it's going to smack us in the head, you know?
Right. And we'll just keep experiencing it again and again till we address it, which I know is scary, right? It's definitely, it feels off-putting and sometimes fearful to confront something that makes us uncomfortable.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so it takes courage, I think.
Today, what our nation and our world is going through, like crises that we haven't been aware of before and probably haven't happened to this extent. It's clearly uncomfortable. And if we hide from that or try to distract ourselves from it, it's not going to help. It doesn't mean we have to be absorbed in the horrendousness of everything. No, it's again, I think, coming back to those two key questions for reflection. Who am I? And what am I here right now for me and for everybody else? And the clearer I can be on that, then I'll know how I want to use my energy. I don't want to waste my energy, right?
Exactly. And I remember that
we can figure those two questions out that you pose. Who am I and what am I here to do? You know, what is my purpose at any age? Because yes, as you have exemplified, it's not always clear cut and it's possible for it to change. It doesn't have to be, you decided I'm not going to be a nun forever. Right. And so that there's always possibility. And I feel the same way about myself, that it took me 54 years to figure out what am I meant to do? What am I here for? And I finally have figured out it's really to inspire women, even though I had maybe inklings of that. And I wasn't sure how, because I feel like I spent my whole career thinking, well, I mean, I like what I'm doing, but I feel like there's something's missing. There's something more. I had that feeling for years. There's something more. So to figure it out is the best feeling.
And it gives you energy then, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it's a reminder for people that are listening that might be 60 or 70 or 80, like yourself in their 80s, or maybe it's younger women that are listening. It doesn't really matter what age, but that potential always exists, that we can find this bliss. We can find this thing that really inspires us, energizes us, as you said, and we can go for it, even if it's baby steps, just taking baby steps, right? For me, it was like, I'm going to make this podcast. I had this idea and I didn't even know how. And just slowly things uncovered in such a way that I just figured it out.
Was there a specific thing that kind of tipped you into doing it? Was there a specific?
It was a lot of reflection, to our point, talking about reflection. I spent a lot of time being silent and still.
Yeah.
Which is very similar to what you were saying about being in the hammock.
Yes.
Being in nature, the thing that can bring you peace. And I noticed, because I tend to be busy, I tend to fill up my life being busy.
Yes.
That when I got more still and quiet, and for example, I did the dishes in silence, I cooked in silence, I walked in silence, I started to pay much more attention to what was around me. And I noticed that when I quieted my mind, I really could hear that inner wisdom bubble up. And that for me was the key. That's when I really got clear. You know, what do I love to do? What makes me feel good? What brings me joy? Some of the same questions you asked yourself when you've been going through some of your reinventions. I did the same thing. And that's what became clear to me in doing that, in just giving myself the space to be reflective. I got really good insights.
Yeah. So Wendy, hearing you say that, I'm thinking when I wrote my book and taught the strategies, my husband, who's a Zen Buddhist, he said, oh, this is too simple. This is too simple. You know, he changed his mind after he saw what happened to people doing it. He saw me demonstrate it at the Hispanic clinic, and people just got it. And it was them tapping into that yearning to be with themselves. And yes, I say it's 60 seconds, you can change your life. But the real invitation is that, wow, if I stop for 60 seconds, I'm going to want more minutes like this, you know?
Yes.
So it feeds the desire to have that time of silence, of reflection, of walking without talking, of eating without having the TV on or the radio, you know, this just to be, just to be. And I have to go back to something you said, Wendy, about people to change in their 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and younger. I don't want you to discriminate against people in their 90s and beyond.
Yeah, that's an excellent point.
I have to tell you a story from my older sister, who still is a nun and very active, very active. She said that one of her colleagues at age 92, this is a woman who was born in China and has written plays in Chinese and English, has taught inmates at Sing Sing Prison how to do plays, created plays with them. So during the COVID time, she's felt a little bit, you know, can't do her usual things. So do you know what she has begun doing? She is learning how to play the electric guitar.
Stop. And she's how old?
Age 92.
I love it. That's amazing. And it just goes to show you what's possible. Because I feel like we're reimagining what aging can be.
Yeah.
It's not in past generations where you retire and you kind of sit around. Obviously, as evidenced by you at 82 being vibrant and timeless and having, you know, when I talked to you a few days ago, you're like, well, I can't do this on this day, because I have all this other stuff going on. Like, you have this very full life.
Hey, Reinvention Rebels. Want to have Reinvention Rebels inspiration delivered to your inbox? Head over to reinventionrebels.com and sign up for my news and notes.
You're so vibrant. What advice do you have for people that maybe are missing that are whatever age they are, and they want to have more vibrancy and see new possibilities? What advice would you have for them?
You know, Wendy, I think it's the simple advice to start out simple, but get real about it. Because many of us, me too, I tended to be busy, so active, so interested in so many things. But it meant that I didn't get to the real focus a lot of times. So if, I don't know, anybody listening, just start out today. Well, even if you started out right now listening to this, listening to us, and you might even put it on pause for 1 minute just to breathe and notice yourself. Gosh, I can breathe. My body knows how to breathe. And do that and see if you think you're wasting time by being on pause for a minute. And if you succeed in doing that, and you could start it again, set aside 2 times today that you will take 5 minutes to be with you. You might call it do nothing, but it means you're being. You're not doing, you're being. So begin by giving yourself little chances. And it might be scary at the beginning, because many times we're not used to being and not doing. So I think that's the advice I would give, Wendy.
That's great advice. And I love this idea of being and not doing. I try to do that some days more successfully than others, of course, like any of us, right? It's a work in progress, and I'm trying to refine my being skills, but there is so much juiciness and luxury in giving yourself permission to just be and not feel like you have to, as you said, be doing whatever that something is. It could be anything, but just doing nothing seems like what?
Yeah.
Well, I just do nothing when I have a laundry list of things to do. Well, I did. I said I could do that.
Yeah. And the beauty of it, Wendy, is that when we are doing, then we're more here. Like, you're being and doing at the same time right now, right? It's not that you're totally lying on the sofa asleep. It's like, wow, we get to be totally present right now with each other as we're doing this. Isn't that amazing?
It is amazing. It is amazing. And it reminds me that I always want to be working on, because I know that I can get distracted. Sometimes, you know, you're talking to someone and you're thinking about your to-do list, or I forgot to take out the trash, and, you know, it's 10 o'clock and they're picking it up at 6, whatever it is. So I definitely can struggle with not always being present, even with Bruce, my husband, right? Sometimes he's telling me, wah, 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 and I'm like, huh, okay, what? You know? So it's, but I'm really trying to be, because I think we all want someone else to be present with us.
Yeah.
We know what it feels like when someone's distracted or it feels like they're not listening to us. And I know how good it feels when someone is giving me their full attention, like you, right? You feel seen.
Yeah. Yeah.
At 82 years young, you are so vibrant, but I also know that aging comes with challenges. They're different for everyone at every age. What's been most challenging for you about aging and how have you addressed that?
Good question. There are some things that I realize that physically I will not be able to do in this lifetime. And I used to be really sad about that, but it's like, okay, so I might not do it, but I can do all of these things. And taking care of my body, definitely. I just went for a 2-hour hike on Sleeping Giant yesterday, and keeping my body working feels so important to me. And the other thing is, I don't have the energy to do all the things I used to do running around. So my focus in the last couple of years has been to focus more on my Oasis training so that I can hand it over to the next generation, so that people who really believe in this and know it will bring it out to the world and ripple it out, and they'll meet people I may never meet. Oh, and did I even tell you that this group in Argentina just helped me develop a whole online course in Oasis, the 28 Oasis Day Journey, 28 to a Happier, Healthier You. And that will be coming out in a couple of weeks. So it's like I'm trying to use my energy and spirit in ways that will have a legacy in some ways, legacy, and also paying more attention to my grandkids who have their whole life in front of them. And as much as possible being with them, it's really challenging now. It's mainly by Zoom, but setting aside to be with them so that I can help nurture them and they give me energy. So I don't know if that answers your question or not.
I'm
not doing my 10K race anymore. I just did 5Ks, you know, but it's like, it's a different pace now, different pace.
It is. It's a different pace, but still very valuable. What I hear you saying is that you're, even though your pace might be different, you still are working to create value in many different ways.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Personally and professionally, in your personal life, with your family.
Yeah.
Leaving that legacy as well as the legacy professionally of Oasis.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that. The other thing I heard you say was about acceptance. And I think this is so key as we age. You said, well, I've accepted the fact that my body is changing.
Yeah.
And I try to think the same thing. So you're 82, I'm 55. But I also notice, obviously, things are starting to change. And I notice, like, I have arthritis in one of my knees and I can't bend it back in a child's pose or certain yoga positions the way I used to be able to do. But I thought, well, you know what? That's okay, because there are all these other things I can do.
Yes.
That I'm not limited by. So I really try to focus on what is it I can do. There's so much any of us can do, despite what might limit us. We are all so full of so much potential.
Absolutely.
That often we don't even tap into, right? We're just like, oh, I can't do X.
Yeah. And it's like, the old song, you know, like accentuate the positive. It's like so much, like my eyes are not as good as they used to be. My ears are not, but God almighty, they can do so much, so much. And my legs walk and I can still eat, you know?
Yes.
Amazing.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that's the mindset that I always want to have, that it's all about what I have, not what I don't have. Always, you know, focusing on trying to, you know, obviously be grateful. And I know a lot of us are focusing on gratitude these days. given our current circumstances where, as you mentioned, we can't see our families in person, or people we're very close to, that we're spending all this time with technology. But man, I am grateful that we have this technology that enables us to be able to do this interview without having to be in the same room, right? And that we can really encourage other people despite some of the challenges that are going on. So, you know, there's always so much to be grateful for. One of the things that, to me, that also goes hand in hand with aging is this idea of loss, that our world tends to get smaller as we age, as people we care about often pass on, our friends, our family. And for me, community is so important, being part of different communities that help support and encourage me, like Oasis, like our Oasis community, my Buddhist community, and many different variations. How do you create community as you age, Millie?
You know, I think that question's really important. And I'm thinking about my husband's mother, Miriam, who was active until she died at 89. And she was active in so many groups, the Women's League for Peace and Freedom, the Bridge Group, the Neighborhood Walking Group. And how we found out she died is she didn't show up for her Monday night bridge game, you know? And she had just learned, we had just given her a computer where she could send out emails. And she had sent out emails 2 hours before that. At age 89, she learned, you know? So I think for all of us, in some ways, this COVID has restricted us, but in other ways, like I have a Zoom meeting with my six sibs every Saturday, and we have never talked this much. They're in Florida, Kentucky, Wisconsin, New York. So it's like taking advantage of this ability to connect electronically is one way we can connect. Even looking at jokes, and YouTube things, songs on our computer, I don't know, it somehow makes me feel part of a larger community. Like my brother Vince sent me, he said, "Have you heard this one?" And my sister Mary said, "Have you heard Barbara Streisand singing, Don't Lie to Me?" So we're communicating in ways. And in my neighborhood, mask on, just walking around, just walking and greeting neighbors feels really important. My Oasis community is really important. I don't belong to a specific religious or spiritual group, but my connection with Thich Nhat Hanh and what he taught me about meditation, I sit in on Zoom meditations with people around the world. So it's like, we're not alone. You know, we can reach out. And I heard from, in my own New Haven, I've been very active on a peace commission for peace and justice against systemic racism, against spending so much on military spending when people don't have enough food to eat. And that's a new community that I just joined last year. They invited me to join, and I've been steering away from joining anything because my time is very precious. But that one felt like, oh, yes, I want to put energy into this. And I've put in hours and hours and met new people, got new ideas. It's feeding me and impelling me at the same time. So I think, again, it's like keeping our eyes open in our quiet times. And the name that Thich Nhat Hanh gave to me when I sat with him with a retreat after my bike accident, I can't remember. Did I tell you the name he gave to me?
I don't think you ever did.
It's so precious to me. It's listening of the heart. Listening of the heart. I mean, God.
It's beautiful. Yeah. And so appropriate. It's so appropriate being the heart-centered person that you are.
Whoa. So it's like wherever your heart is, wherever your energy is, it wants to be honored and used. It doesn't want to be wasted. So each person listening is unique and precious. There's nobody else in the world like you. You know what they say about snowflakes? No one is alike. No single human being is like anybody else. Yeah.
Exactly. That's exactly right. As we wrap up, I want to see if there are any parting, you've already shared so much wisdom. I just want to say you've already shared so much wisdom in our conversation today, but any final parting words you want to share with the audience about the idea of reinvention at any age?
I think just do it. Just do it. Don't think about it. Just be here and go for it. Yeah.
It's wonderful. Such sage advice from the amazing Millie Greneau. Millie, I want to ask where people can find you, because I know that you do all these cool things and some people might want to connect with you. What's the best way for someone to reach out to you?
I think the two best ways, I have two websites. One is MillieGreneau.com, and I'm sure you'll spell it out for people, right?
Yes,
and
indeed.
The other one is the Focused on the Oasis community, which is much bigger than me now, OasisInTheOverwhelm.com, and know that the trainers are doing coaching individual workshops. I am too. The training goes on. If anybody wants to do more of the training simply for themselves, or if they want to do it to share with other people, they can find out all that information on OasisInTheOverwhelm.com.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And we will put all that information into the show notes so that people can easily, if they didn't have a chance to write that down, so people can easily find it and be able to be in contact with you if they're so inspired. I cannot thank you enough, Millie, for this beautiful conversation, for talking about these key themes about reflection and reinvention, the idea that there are no limits. Doesn't matter how old, young or old we are, we can always create something new.
Yes. Yes.
It's been just it's wonderful. True. Right? I feel so inspired. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go when we're done and go back and be in silence. Just work on being. More being, less doing.
I'm just thinking back, like, oh, who would have thought 60 years ago, 70 years ago, 50 years, 40, that I'd be doing what I'm doing now? I had no idea. My parents, who are long gone, I think they'd be tickled. They had no idea what their kids would do. So it's like, keep adding to whatever is in the world that we can do to make it more beautiful, more joyful, more compassionate. Each of us has a unique offering to give to it. Yeah.
Yeah. So perfectly said. Thank you. Thank you, my dear friend.
Thank you, dear friend. Thanks for inviting me to be here with you. It's a pleasure.
It was really a joy. And I'm excited for everyone to hear our great conversation. Hey, amazing listener. Did you love today's episode? Did you find inspiration you can apply to your own life? I'd love for you to take a moment to rate and review the Reinvention Rebels podcast on your favorite platform. That would be awesome, and I would be so appreciative. Let's help spread the word to more people and get them inspired. Are you tired of waiting for someday? Feel like you're too old or it's too late to reinvent yourself? Unsure of how you'd even get started on the path to midlife reinvention? I'm here to help. as your guide on the side and host of the top 2% globally rated Reinvention Rebels podcast, I've been around the reinvention block a lot. Here's a simple way you can get started. Sign up for my free audio, 5 questions to spark your curiosity and inspire your Reinvention Rebel journey. It all starts with getting curious about what's possible. And I've got 5 questions to help tease out some very cool ideas. Let's get started. Details are in the show notes.